Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a range of subjects spanning the whole of the private rented sector. In this episode, we're going to have a look at some of the key tech predictions for 2024. And so when I say that we are the tenant referencing business that got good at tech, it's very much thanks to some of the genius tech innovators that I have around me that have helped ensure we continue to innovate in this space. So I'm really pleased to be joined today by Gary Barker, who is not only a business friend, he's our old CTO and basically a tech genius, and our very own Chief Tech Officer, Phil Surface. In today's session, I want us to explore the big question: is how far can tech go to really replace people? Welcome to you, Gary, and to you, Phil.
Hi, Heidi. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks,
Thank
Heidi.
You for joining us. Thank you for joining us as well, Phil. So we're going to get straight into the questions, because actually this one was quite hard to condense down, really, because there's lots to say. As you both know, our business, the Lettings Hub, like I'm sure many other businesses, are determined that tech is a brilliant enabler for both our people and our customers. And that is, we never really want those decisions that need a human eye to be lost to technology, but we do want to cut unnecessary processes to save time and increase efficiency and save money. But how do businesses make sure they get that balance right? Gary, can I come to you first for your view?
Yeah, I mean, Heidi, when you start looking at questions such as, you know, tech, can it really replace people? That's a debate that's been around for centuries now. You know, when first of all, they textiles industry and they created looms, you know, digital cameras and Kodak, car manufacturing, you know, they've all been in that space where, you know, they've talked about disruption, they've talked about digitization and things. You know, we've seen it more recently in travel with the likes of Expedia and Airbnb. We've seen it more recently as well with print media and newspapers, books, you know, and more recently with manufacturing. You know, 3D printing is, you know, become kind of the new way of the world, if you like. The big question when it gets asked about real estate, though, is it is different. You know, real estate, you know, renting and buying a property is often an emotional piece, and it's also the biggest transaction you're going to do in your life. So, you know, trying to replace, you know, for technology to replace people on that is, I think, is a huge issue. We've seen, you know, disruptors come along over the years, lots of hybrid agents, you know, kind of try to replace people with kind of technology and deliver the solution. But it's the trust factor, isn't it? You know, you trust somebody when you're talking to them, when you're in front of them. Why are we still on the high street? Well, people want to go in there and they want to see, they want to talk to their agent, they want to listen to them. So I think buying and selling a house still, and renting and letting a house, is still something that is, because it's such an emotional piece, means that technology can't replace it. What technology can do, though, is to provide more opportunities. You know, it can feedback, it can provide information, it can automate solutions, it can capture more information. We can know more about our customers than we've ever known before. And I think that's where we're probably going to see a much more kind of change and a shift. You know, people doing what people do best, which is communicating, but communicating with the right people at the right time in the right way. I mean, that's kind of my viewpoint on that, Heidi.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think trust actually has come up in loads of our podcasts, really, because the credibility and the reliability of a business when a landlord or a seller is putting that kind of trust in that company becomes hugely important. And if they can't actually talk to a person or get to kind of physically feel and see it for themselves, I think it kind of puts it into question. And that's kind of, I agree with you. We're a people industry, and I don't think that's ever necessarily going to change. How about you, Phil? What's your view?
I think absolutely tech does replace people, but it replaces their role rather than, you haven't got a line of typists that no longer work in the typewriter pool. What's happened is that shifted and it's moved, and actually you're getting more out of the people. So in terms of what happens in the world, it's an evolutionary thing. Tech is feeding in always and replacing the mundane, the chores, and you're getting much better out of people. So absolutely.
I guess it makes jobs more enjoyable as well. If some of the mundane and the basic can get removed, it kind of gives way to doing things that are fairly engaging, mainly in roles. So if we kind of look forward then, we obviously know tech is very fast paced, and I'm sure there are a lot of up and coming trends that we're going to see over the next year. And I'm sure with tech, what is planned for 2024 was probably on your radar as an emerging theme even back in 2022. So what do the newest innovations look like? What are the ones to watch? And what are we going to see more of in later years?
I think it feeds into actually one of the comments you just said there, that people will do what they enjoy the most. Yeah. So salespeople, they like to sell. You know, that's in their, it's in their category. It's what they like to do. Operational people like to work on operations. You know, the difference between a property manager and a lettings negotiator, they're hugely different individuals. They've got different psychologies. And that's where the technology will come into play, I think, a huge amount. I mean, it would be remiss to, of talking to technology if you weren't talking about AI and automation. You know, we touch on it, and every, you know, it's in the news every single day at the moment. And, you know, I think there's a huge amount of AI and automation that is going to extend into this industry. You know, there's, and we can talk, and we'll talk no doubt today about the good and the bad about kind of AI. But fundamentally, from a technology perspective, I carried out a piece of research recently where I looked at every single major task that a lettings business does, and it is 75 high level tasks. Obviously, all those tasks are broken down into smaller individual constituent parts, but 75 different types of jobs. Of those, we could automate 2/3 of those jobs. And in order to automate them and add AI to them, we start actually increasing the opportunities we have. So, you know, if we talk about lead management or past landlords, past tenants, you know, we've got, most of these agencies have been around for 10 years plus. They've got 10 years of data. Yeah. Well, if they're capturing information about their landlord, you know, they know what area they live in, they know what interests, they know what hobbies, they know what activities, they know what types of properties they rent out, they know what kind of tenants they let out to. The AI engines can feed that information into saying, well, okay, this hasn't been a landlord now for this amount of period. He tends to increase his portfolio every 3 or 4 years. Okay, we should now be targeting this. So if I'm a sales agent looking to make 50, 60 calls a day, well, I know which calls to actually make. Or if I want to distribute a message to a number of different people, I can use AI nowadays in such a smart way where you can also make telephone calls. I can sit there and say, look, AI, you know, Mr. Chatbot AI, I'd like to send here's a list of 1,000 people I want to send a message to, but can you actually set the tone to be based around their interests, hobbies and activities? And if they're middle-aged, you know, younger, I can actually automate that. It doesn't ring, their phone doesn't ring up. All they do is they get a voicemail, seemingly from me, letting them know that the 33 Acacia Avenue's just come on the market, etc. Creating lots more opportunities, targeted sales.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it allows us to work so much smarter, doesn't it? But not necessarily really take away from what we're ultimately still trying to do the same thing. How about you, Phil?
I think 2024... In the AI space and in machine learning tech is incredibly exciting. There's a whole raft of things that have happened. I think we only need to look at earlier in this year when Google were forced to call a code red when the ChatGPT Microsoft came along and changed the world, really. And what we've seen, apart from the initial hysteria, this has settled down, and actually people are starting to use it. They're almost starting to use the Bing search engine. It's really moving forward now at a rapid pace, and it's normalizing. So press headlines are calming down. We're now using it in our day-to-day. Google have had to jump up, increase their own exposure in AI, and bring their products forward. So it's really, really quite exciting. One of the wonderful things you're seeing coming out of the Microsoft and ChatGPT space is Copilot, which Microsoft are leveraging into all their technologies. So right now it's still in its early phases, but Outlook will be able to draft an email for you based on an email that's just come in. Teams will be replying to messages. When you're in a meeting, it will be prompting you to say, this is an important thing that's just been said by Heidi, for instance. Those things are all going to start coming in, and they're going to change the way we work. These are really interesting. And actually, if we do that in our services and we start bringing in what the customer and what the consumer and what the operator are looking for, this is going to get very, very exciting, and it's going to change very quickly.
Yeah.
So these are things to look out for in 2024. It's going to be a very quick ride, I think.
Yeah. And I think in our business, Bill, obviously, when we reference a tenant, the amount of data that we hold on that individual, and we know everything about their history, and, you know, we kind of know their plans for the future. There's already so much we're learning from that, isn't there, in terms of how the product, you know, what we're kind of assessing behind the scenes is changing all the time. It's becoming pretty smart very quickly.
Yeah, and one of the wonderful things actually in the data that we collect, there's a lots of touch points in there. And when you look at what AI can bring to the table, actually you don't necessarily need to be highly defined in what you're looking for. It can spot trends in there that that our eye wouldn't be looking for necessarily. So to take a very easy example, we have a number of emails that go out at a particular time in a particular day, and it's a blanket. So at 10 o'clock, all these emails go. Well, is that efficient? And do we break it down on what we know about the person, the demographic, whatever, will we get a better response at 3 o'clock? Or do we need to care and let the machine send it when it thinks is the right time to send it? So those things are evolving. It doesn't need to be necessarily about the decision making. It can be about the efficiency and letting go of certain things that we would normally sit around for an hour and talk about, and then it would go in and then we don't look at again. So they're really exciting.
I think as well, it's one of the things I think that we all feel is if we're being kind of, if tech's taking over, do we lose that personal service? But some of the things that you kind of both talking about there is actually we can make it way more personalized than we even are at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Heidi, you not just make it personalized, you can deliver content in so many different ways, and you can make it dynamic. So, you know, we talk about emails a lot because it's still one of the biggest forms of communication. But if I look at other countries, WhatsApp is now overtaking email with communications. And one of the key things with WhatsApp is I can reply to it. So imagine a scenario where, I'm doing a tenant reference and I've sent out the request for the reference. I upload the first bit of information. I complete the information in WhatsApp. It comes back out. The AI bot takes over and connects it into, okay, I've got a scoring algorithm that works out, am I getting the right kind of data here? In this case here, 100%, I'm happy with this individual. No, 80%, I'm referring it to an individual. And actually, certain profile cases, high profile cases that we need to check up on, it goes to an individual to make a sense point. So there's lots of different things we can do with that kind of communication and the automation. And this is why I call it automation and AI, because they flick quite nicely together.
Yeah. And I think we know through our processes that actually even how people want to communicate to us and by what method changes depending on what point in the process they're at and how, you know, how long they've been in that process. It's really kind of fascinating. Going back to AI, it's obviously a very hot topic, as we've kind of talked about. What are the good and the bad? And what are the things really to, you know, it's quite scary, I think, from somebody that loves technology and I try to understand it, but I obviously have nowhere near the knowledge that you two have. It's actually quite scary in terms of what it can do. And on a recent podcast that we did, when we were talking to HooYou about identity, you know, proving identity and the fraud element in that space with AI becomes quite worrying, I suppose, in terms of what it can do. What's your assessment? What are the good and the bad, and how will it kind of play out in the end?
I'll start off with some risks, I suppose. And look, these, every risk and, you know, kind of bad aspect, if you want to flag it with AI, comes with a bit of a contingency here. So to start off with, AI isn't transparent. We don't know, not one person knows what it is. It can't be explained. You can't explain AI. A human, I mean, Heidi, we worked together for a long period of time. You know, some days I'd come into work and I was as happy as Larry and not a problem. Other mornings I'll go into work and I'm miserable because it's taken me an hour and a half to get into Peterborough. Somebody's given me some bad news first in the morning and I bring that emotion with me. AI doesn't bring any of that. So it can't be explained. We don't know what it is. It's artificial for a purpose. It's been manipulated by algorithms. And these are weighted algorithms that require data to perform it. So I think there's going to be there are risks around that. There's risks around the fact that it's coded. I mean, this is a platform. This was coded by individuals. You know, it relies on data, but that data has to do something. So the algorithms have to do something with it. So there is almost certainly a level of social and human influence. And as a result of that, we do risk what I call the common sense factor. You know, human beings have common sense. You know, they will look at things. You know, that's a cat, not a dog, but a computer can't. So we just have to bear in mind the risks.
One of the things that I think is very refreshing at the Lettings Hub, and obviously working with Heidi, she's very passionate about the personal service still. So one very good example is with the live chat that we integrated. We could so easily have gone with automatic replies, building up knowledge base pieces, you know, and they are so frustrating. I hate them with a passion. And for someone that's in tech, that's an odd thing to say. But actually having the person behind the box is always really, really important. And I think as long as people keep an eye on the on how they implement the AI, that's brilliant. Nobody wants to be, and they will be, talking to an AI that just doesn't get what the problem is. Just in the same way as we used to get stuck in IVRs, pressing 1, 5, and 9 and shouting at the thing and then being disconnected. We can enhance that. So we can get rid of the common things that the guys need to type into the box. We can make it more professional. We can make it more standard, but we should never replace the person that's sitting there until the AI bot comes along that's clever enough to do it. And then we're that's a different question, isn't it?
I think it helps with training though, because if we take live chat, I've really taken to our live chat because it gives us so much information, not only about where people need to ask a question or, you know, but you can see their emotion. We can actually see them typing before they've even submitted to us. So trying to train our staff to basically understand the emotion that somebody's writing. So they might go, and then they delete it. And then they write, please, can you help me with whatever? Actually, just seeing that emotion from somebody or how they're actually asking the question, making sure our people know how the best way to respond is really important to us in terms of where we want to strive to be. The same is when we're, you know, calling to sell services, let's say to a tenant, if it's insurance, we can look at the data that we hold on them in terms of are they a first time tenant? Are they moving in with pets? Are they moving in with children? What type of property are they moving into? How much is the rent? How much do they earn? In terms of then making sure the questioning and where we position that policy is at the right level. But we rely on humans getting it right every time. And actually using the combination of a machine kind of telling them the types of things to say and how to position it with that human element would be definitely fantastic, I definitely think. Just going back to one of the things that was kind of mentioned there is, I suppose the question that's in my mind is, how will AI then affect the dev space? So will AI start actually coding for us? And actually what it will come in and do is actually replace some of our tech resource and developers, not just necessarily front of house.
I can kick off with that, and I'll hit it on two different levels, Heidi. So first of all, code building solutions have been around for a while now. They are improving. AI obviously is generative. It can, a lot more plain text can provide code bases, yeah. But I'm going to now sound pretty awful to developers, yeah. But a developer is an engineer, yeah. A builder is a builder. They build houses, yeah. It's very important to understand what you're building and why you're building. So, you know, if you tell it's no different. Code building and code design is no different to anything in the world if you don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it. So it's the product teams and the product that makes a big difference. That's where, if you like, the intelligence comes into it. So I think AI will play a big part in here. I think you'll get a lot more product specialists who actually do prototype in code rather than prototyping things like Figma going forward. I think Figma will almost certainly, those kind of design packages will almost certainly become pseudocode going forward. But engineers are developers and they're engineers, they're toolers. That's what they do. They're brilliant at it. And so there's a big part of that that can't be replaced, but the commodity tooling will be in place. But the strength in product and technology comes from what you're building and why you're building it.
I think it's a very, very interesting space, actually, and one that I've played around with a fair amount in code generation. I think it's very, very exciting, and I think you can hone in on your clever minds and make them build the clever stuff rather than getting stuck in the mundane. Again, what we were talking about with the typist and the typewriter pools and all of those things. Actually, it's the same piece. It's that movement that's coming through. And if we look at the things that are coming out at the moment where people are getting very upset, where the machine language and the AIs have been trained on GitHub, for instance. So they're looking at everybody else's code and they're building these things. Well, that's brilliant. This is the search engine and this is the pool of knowledge and that all coming together. So as long as nobody gets lazy and just starts using AI generated code and then pops that into production and then goes home and expects everything to be fine, it's brilliant. I used it quite recently. I was playing around with a little bit of SQL and I asked the chatbot numerous times with questions to refine it, and it popped out with something that worked in the end. It took a while, but these are the things that happen, and I think it's part of that piece we were talking about earlier, where things integrate and tech just sort of helps the journey along. It fills in the gap of the mundane, and people evolve and their roles evolve. So actually, yes, let's use the brains and get rid of the code monkey.
There's some cool stuff. I mean, to add to it, one of the biggest things that developers hate doing is bug fixing and bug checking. Yeah. Now, I've seen so far, I'm seeing the highest areas of AI on the code side of things on bug fixing and bug checking. That for me is kind of a no-brainer. The first thing you do is you push your code through and you get it checked and verified. However, what that does raise a question about, and I think Phil flagged this when he mentioned things like GitHub, is where's all this data going? All of our code that we're pushing into the machine learn to understand what to do and what to deliver, where's all that going? What's it all being used for? And so I'm a massive consumer of it. I mean, I'm coding with AI at the moment and I'm doing a lot of it through the Code Builder AI, but you know, it's somebody else's code at the end of the day that I am using. But certainly bug fixing, bug checking, I think there's a huge amount of areas there that make a massive difference.
But is it going to make developing things, building things faster?
It has to. Yes. I mean, it has to. You're going to get, and this is why I say tooling, commodity services. You know, we've seen it more recently with things like, you know, sign on. When was the last time when was the last time you wrote a piece of code to sign a user on? We just don't do it anymore, do we? You know, we're using single sign-on platforms. You know, we just don't need to do it anymore. It's all that tooling is available to us.
And, yeah, and exactly. I suppose the other thing is for us, we spend a huge amount of time testing everything. You know, we build it and then we test it and then we test it again and we test it again. How does it change the testing world?
Yeah, I mean, automated testing and kind of solution finding, I think, is where the AI will have a strong remit to succeed in. I mean, you'd be foolish not to place code through AI building for that reason, because it's exactly what it is. It's an algorithm to test against poor code, so it will go through that process for you.
But that process at the moment is quite, you know, we do one step and then we do another and then we do another. Actually, developers can test as it goes, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, indeed. What I was thinking there, as Gary was speaking as well, in terms of the way that in the past we would spend a lot of time coding unit tests, for instance, and they can often take as long as the code itself, and those things are very, very important to make sure you get good quality code. But the AI would obviously, as it goes on, the scope will widen, and it'll be able to look at its implications on the whole system, and that's really where things get it quite excited. With current testing processes, we'd step as we go through. The AI will start using the system as a user would use the system, which again is very, very interesting. You're not taking a pre-recorded run, which is what we do now, which is where you will miss things again, because we can't test for absolutely everything. The AI, you can leave it overnight, or you can do it to run immediately upon a code deployment and to go through your entire site. Run the journey with loads of different scenarios. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't and it doesn't need us to prescribe the journey, which I think is the key difference here. It can be intelligent and it doesn't need a person to sit there and try and think of all the different things that can go wrong. We've seen it ourselves when we're testing software. As we go through our journey, a bug will still come out at the end. And it's been asked me 100 times, why didn't we spot that in testing? Well, because we didn't look for that in testing. We tested every other scenario, but we seem we missed this one. AI won't miss that one because, or if it does, it will learn for next time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess a bit like, you know, I always think of the word prop tech back in the day. That was such a buzzword. Now I think people are over it a bit. But AI is another one, isn't it? That people are going to, people band it around. But the actual level of AI that is actually sat behind the scenes in people's systems and what they do is going to be on a whole scale of kind of zero to a million. And actually what it's really doing is kind of a bit of the unknown. Is it just going to be a word that people like to throw around to kind of get people interested? Or how is it going to distinguish who is using it smartly or not? Or is it just another marketing thing?
I'd be contentious, I will, Heidi. I think the word prop tech has been around, but I don't think it's ever existed. You know, I think if you look at, I mean, what do we do? If I was to ask anybody in this industry, what's the best prop tech available? Yeah. What would they say? I mean, is it the CRMs? Is it, you know, tenancy progression? Is it payment solutions? Is it marketing? But how on earth is that prop tech? I mean, what are we doing different that hasn't been around in other industries for donkeys? I mean, the CRMs are still pretty basic, you know, that you put customers in there, you put details in there, they transact a property, you list a property. You know, it's not exactly, you know, earth-shattering technology, is it, at the end of the day? I mean, it's just, you know, basic data handling, data storage, and a few processes in there. This is where I do see AI and automation adding a huge benefit. I think prop tech becomes real prop tech then. It actually does save you time and effort. It does become more creative. It does open up your eyes. You know, going back to some of those kind of topics I talked about earlier, where you look at what a lettings agent does and what a sales agent does, you know, all of a sudden, you know, in a world where AI and automation and data becomes much more available to them, then you can start adding real prop tech. And so I think prop tech still is in its infancy now. And I think this is going to be the next stage of it. And you're going to see much more prop tech, and you're going to see a hell of a lot more of consolidation of prop tech, where people try and build lots of different systems together because data is so powerful.
So I'm just going to ask a question then. I was talking to some letting agents very recently, and what they said to me kind of really made me stop and think. I asked them, what do they have as one of their biggest challenges right now? And what they actually said is when they put a property live, they have so many inquiries all flood in at the beginning that actually it's not the best day when that happens, which is actually a bit bonkers to me, because we used to always love it when obviously a property went live and it was like getting the deal and, you know, you were ready to go to the next stage. How are we going to help that part of the industry?
I can start off if you want, Heidi. I think lead, you know, that kind of whole focus around lead management and communication has been pivotal to what we've looked at in the past. If you look at solutions that exist at the moment, which kind of do basic kind of handling and responses to the inquiries, that goes a step further. I think you and I got very excited, 2 years ago when we kind of created Property Passport. You know, for me, that's still a solution that actually should be wide stream. You know, I mean, we talked about it earlier, 24 inquiries. For every lettings property comes on the market, they get 24 inquiries. How many of those can actually rent that property? And where I think that will change is I think the automation and AI around that will start drilling down and say, right, it's not 24 people, it's actually 6 who actually can take this property forward and are capable of taking it forward through some very careful questioning, through some very careful understanding of who and what they are, And just some basic information gathering. And let's not get started on the fact that agents all invariably know who their tenant, you know, prospective tenants are anyway. They take on a property, they've got a portfolio of thousands of potential tenants, and they don't have a good way of communicating that property all the time. They rely on kind of email blasts. Whereas wouldn't it be great to kind of consciously drip feed it? And I'm not saying it takes the portals out of the equation, but it certainly reduces the exposure to the portals.
Yeah, it's interesting. We actually looked at it for one of our customers because we do demographic reporting on the types of tenants that are moving into the property. And actually what they realized from looking at the data that we gave them was 80% of their tenants came from within a 2-mile radius of their office, because actually they're in a prime part of London within, so they're walking past the window, they're literally right on their doorstep, and they hadn't moved very far at all. And it really then started to get them to think about how do they reach those people and how do they change their marketing. So a couple of last questions to finish us off. What is the perfect ingredient to make the best developer?
I still think passion, irrespective of the tech that you're using, the stack that you're using, that passion to keep going. It moves very quickly. Tech moves very, very quickly. I suppose going back to one of the earlier questions about is AI a buzzword? Yes, it is. It's like we don't use World Wide Web anymore. It's the internet. This is happening all the time with tech. If you take your eye off the ball, it's moved 100 miles an hour without you. Having a developer who gets excited when you're talking about something rather than groaning about the number of hours and how difficult this is going to be, and throwing up problems. I always want to speak with someone and talk with people that just write passionate code as well. So the perfect developer is nothing to do with what tech stack, it's how excited you get.
And what's your magic formula, do you think, Gary?
For me, it's creativity. I think I like working with developers that are creative. You know, there's lots of different ways to develop something. You know, you want to develop a widget, there's loads of different ways of getting there. I like working with the guys that are creative.
So thank you very much to both Gary and Phil for a really fantastic chat. Before you go, we're asking all of our podcast guests for a funny story or anecdote of something that's happened over their career. So Gary, let's come to you.
There's a silly example I had when, and this is tech driven, yes, this is how you start using tech, yeah? So I think most people know I went to work over in South Africa, and I was due to talk at a technology conference. So they said, look, can you come along? We're running a prop tech conference. You've just moved over. We'd love you to kind of talk. So it was, and it was at the Johannesburg Marriott. Don't know the area at all. You know, I'm in a suit and I get in my car and I sit on Google and I go, right, Johannesburg Marriott, Melrose, go. Don't even think about any of it. And all of a sudden, I drove through this area and I've got people chasing me down the street, and I'm driving through this place called Hillbrow, which is, you just don't drive down there. And I'm chased down the street by people kind of trying to get into my car, jump in, everything else. And then I drive around the corner, I get pulled over by a policeman. And then here I am, absolutely freaking out. I've been in South Africa for 2 weeks at this point, get pulled over by the policeman. The policeman says, what are you doing? And he's going, are you buying drugs? And I'm like, no, I'm definitely not buying drugs. I'm lost. I'm speaking at an event. And he goes, right, you turn right, then you turn left, and never come back here ever again. So from that moment on, I learned to be much more careful when using Google Maps.
Oh, well, I think we're very lucky to have you back in the UK, Gary. And safely, by the sound of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, and safely. Alive. Yes. Okay. I have a wonderful interview technique which I've used over the years when looking at devs and trying to find the right fit. And that is to ask them to write anything that they want to, in whatever language they want to. But it tells me something about them. Well, this has worked for me for a long time. I had a young lady come in, and I gave her the test. 2 days later, it arrived, and it was a piece of PHP code. One first line was, hello, my name is Jane, I went to this university, and completely missing the point. And there you are. So now I tell all of my interviewees, no, it's got to tell me something about you as a hobby or an interest, not a sentence or a couple of paragraphs telling me your name. Yes. Oh,
so Jane didn't get the job. Thank you very much to both of you. To ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please leave us a review if you like what you hear. Thank you very much for listening.
This is an original podcast brought to you by the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech.